Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Thank God it's Friday, American. And if it's Friday and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, then it's definitely Southern Sense on the radio here on Blog Talk Radio, Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, and Tea Party Community. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And of course, my co-host, Cool Mike, has abandoned me again. Unfortunately, he did not win his court case, and before the judge had put his gavel down, Cool Mike filed, what the heck do you call it, an appeal. Thank you. My brain is working. Thank you. He filed an appeal, and he's back in court today fighting the cause of the good and the just. So I hope you're going to enjoy the show today here on Southern Sense. We've got a lot coming up. We've got a special guest, Brenda Leonard. She is running for Senate against Lamar Alexander out of the state of Tennessee. So she'll be joining us about quarter after the hour. Want to welcome everyone that is in the chat room. I see a bunch of my good old buddies are in there. Thank you for joining us. And for you listening and not in the chat room, we welcome you anyway. I want to remind you that this coming Tuesday, March 25th, Georgia is going to honor Vietnam heroes on Medal of Honor Day. This is going to be at 11 a.m. on Tuesday in the north wing of the state capitol. Governor Nathan Deal will issue a proclamation declaring March 29th of this year as Vietnam Veterans Day in Georgia. The theme of the ceremony, which falls on National Medal of Honor Day, is a tribute to Georgia's Vietnam Medal of Honor recipients. And the Georgia Department of Veterans Services will individually recognize each of the state's 12 Native sons who were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor during the Vietnam War. One of these sons, Congressional Medal of Honor recipient James E. Livingston, Major General, retired from the U.S. Marine Corps, will be on hand to give remarks. I had the pleasure of meeting General Livingston a couple of years back, and he has been a guest on our show, along with Colin Heaton. And Colin Heaton also served under him, and he wrote the book, Noble Warrior, about Major General Livingston. And also on hand will be Claude M. Kickliker, Lieutenant General Retired U.S. Army. He's the Director of the Department of Defense Office of Commemorations. Quote, Vietnam veterans deserve our sincere respect, appreciation, and public recognition, said Commissioner Pete Wheeler. We gather to honor the brave Georgians who served in that conflict, and we honor the service of every man and woman who put on a uniform and answered their nation's call to service. Program participants will include Atlanta Vietnam Veterans Business Association, the West Atlanta Douglas Choral Society, and the Westlake High School Junior ROTC. Over a quarter million Georgian residents, approximately one-third of the state's total veteran population, are Vietnam War veterans. As the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War begins, the Georgia Department of Veterans Services invites all Georgians to pay tribute to the service and sacrifices of these brave men and women. Here are some Vietnam War facts and figures. 8.7 million Americans served on active duty. 7,391,000 Vietnam War veterans are alive today. 228,000 Georgians served. 1,584 Georgians were killed in action. 8,534 Georgians were wounded. 21 were held prisoners of war, and 35 are still unaccounted for. So if you're in the Atlanta area on Tuesday, take some time at 11 in the morning and go over to the state capitol and join in honoring these Medal of Honor recipients. Our dedication today is going out to Marine Lance Corporal Caleb L. Erickson. He was killed during the combat operations on February 28, 2004. And this is from the JDNews.com out of Jacksonville, North Carolina. Marine and Sailors, 1st Battalion, 9th Marine Regiment, gathered to remember a fallen brother aboard Camp Leatherneck on Friday. Lance Corporal Caleb L. Erickson, a motor transportation mechanic with Motor Transportation Platooning, Headquarters Company, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, died while conducting combat operations in Helmand Province, Afghanistan on February 28th. Quote, we come together today to remember Lance Corporal Caleb Erickson, said Navy Lieutenant Doyle E. McMurray, the 1st Battalion 9th Marines chaplain, during the opening prayer for Erickson's memorial. He was many things to many people, but to us, he was our brother. Erickson, 20, of Minnesota, was stationed out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. He is remembered by his peers as a Marine who would always volunteer for the jobs that others didn't want to do, but made these jobs fun with his sarcastic humor. He always found the positive side of everything, said 1st Lieutenant John Matlega, the logistics officer for Motor Transport Platoon, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines. His sense of humor and optimism always lifted the hopes and moods of those around him. Erickson's peers who spoke at his memorial all mentioned his work ethic and willingness to help everyone. When Erickson saw others working, he would drop what he was doing to help them out. He was loved by all and showed his love for all with his selfless attitude. The day of the convoy, most of the platoon left for a quick chow break after the brief, said Corporal Martin McNamara, also with 1st Battalion 9th Marines, who then began prepping his truck while others ate. When the guys came back, there was Erickson with a heaping to-go tray in his hands. He said, hey, man, I grabbed you some food. I told him I hadn't expected anyone to grab anything for me, he said. Hey, you're my driver. I got to make sure you're taken care of. I patted him on the shoulder and said, Erickson, this is why I love you, not knowing it would be my last time. Everyone who knew Erickson knew of his love for his Volkswagen GTI and his fellow Marines, but Erickson loved one thing more than all others, his family. Everyone knew that about him, how close he was with his family, said Lance Corporal Derek Feck, again, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, who commented on Erickson's trademark smile during the memorial. I think he got the most letters out of anyone in the whole platoon while we were out there. That just shows how much he was loved, and if you ever met him, you knew why he was loved. Erickson had a strong Minnesota accent that he and his peers loved to make fun of. His fellow Marines knew him as someone who could make himself the butt of a joke to keep everyone smiling and laughing. He was a model for how every man should be, said Lance Corporal Zachary DeWar, again, 1st Battalion, 9th Marines, who considered Erickson his best friend and brother. He always had a smile on his face, and if you didn't, he put one on your face within 2 seconds of talking to him. He was the greatest man I have ever met. I plan on living every day just as he would, and I hope others do too. He made an impact on others' lives and a huge impact on mine. I know you're up there, keeping us safe. The memories of you are what keep me going. Semper Fidelis. I love you, brother. This show is dedicated to Lance Corporal Erickson, to all of the brave men and women out there who are serving and who will serve. I dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon, not only to the military, but to all first responders. God bless them all.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name,
by Todd Allen Herndon, and you can download it for free at toddallenherndon.com. I have my co-host with me, Cool Chris Holly. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful day here in Charleston, South Carolina.
I know. It's gorgeous down here, just about an hour south of you in sunny Beaufort. I stepped outside to get the nail, and I'm saying, I don't need a coat. I don't need a sweater. Yay, spring is here.
Exactly. No, I think it's going to get cold down here again soon, but we'll hold on to these days as we got them. It'll be 90 degrees down here soon enough for the summer, but I apologize to everyone that's north of the Mason-Dixon line right now, enjoying the melting snow and more snow to come probably next week.
I don't apologize. Go, nah, 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 nah. And listen, we got ourselves a fantastic guest. She's a fellow tea partier and an absolutely awesome, awesome lady. And she's running for Senate against Lamar Alexander in Tennessee. And we want to wish her a lot of good luck. Welcome aboard, Brenda.
Hey, Ann, good afternoon. It's a beautiful day here in Tennessee as well. It's a mild, like 60-something degrees. I didn't need on a coat. And just looking forward to this great spring weather. Listen, I know about those hot summer days. I was raised in Atlanta, and it gets hot.
Hotlanta. Well, that's because you're all landlocked up there. I mean, down here on the coast where we are in the low country of South Carolina, we get the nice breeze coming off the ocean here. So it does get hot at times. But, you know, if you love the South, you just know how to go with the flow.
I do. And, hey, listen, this summer things are going to get heated up during this election season, and we're going to be cool, calm, and collected, ready for it.
Yeah, I have the link to your website up on our show page, but as I speak, I am putting it into the chat room so people can go to your website, which is Brenda, your first name and last name, LENARD.com.
That's right.
Matter of fact, I sent a link to your website and your Brenda Leonard Academy to a gentleman running for against Lindsey Graham for the Senate here in South Carolina.
And I said,
do you see what she's doing here with the social networks and everything and going after young voters and so forth? And I sent them a message, and I said, I think you guys may want to imitate this. So,
exactly. And, you know, you just made a very good point I wanted to mention, is that this election cycle, I am seeing more and more just regular people that are saying they've had enough. And not only are they saying that they've had enough, they're making bold leaps of faith, like myself, to stand up for the Constitution, to stand up for America, and to say enough is enough. People like myself, they're tired of the handshaking, back-slapping, and Constitution trampling that's happened in Washington, D.C. And rather than sit back and ask who's going to do something about it, I decided I'm going to do something about it, and that is run for the United States Senate here in Tennessee, because most people have had enough. Most of the people that I've talked to, they're sick and tired of working harder and longer for less and less. That's not the American dream that you and I have grown to love and appreciate, and enough is enough. We're all being sold down the river by our elected officials.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what's getting me crazy, and I got into a debate with someone, they're going, oh, hooray, Obama is raising the minimum wage, and now he's going to have to salary workers also. You know, I always grew up, a salary was a salary, and you worked as many hours as you needed to fulfill your duties on your job. You didn't get overtime. And everyone's going, oh, how wonderful, wonderful. And I actually sat down with a pen and paper and a person, and I said, think about this. You're going to get X amount of dollars additional now per hour, and this is going to kick you out of the tax bracket that you're in now, where you're paying X percent on your federal income taxes, as well as your state and city. I said, now you go up to a higher minimum wage, and you and everyone else across the board have their wages increased, which means milk goes up, bread goes up, gasoline goes up, your rent goes up, the interest rate on your mortgage goes up. And I said, now you are also now paying additional taxes because you're now in a completely different tax bracket. You're paying more taxes than you would have had you stayed at the other wage where everything cost a lot less. I said, you're going to have less money.
Less money. And you know what? And let me even piggyback on what you just said for just a minute. Who is going to pay that cost? And you just outlined it so well. When the minimum wage rate goes up, or even if the salary rate goes up, extra money, who's going to bear that cost? If you say, well, the business is going to absorb that cost, the only thing that the company will do is pass that cost along to you and to me, the consumers, or they're going to cut back the services, cut back the production, or cut back the employment. There are no winners in these type of situations. And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned about the minimum wage. I was talking to a couple of people about this, and I said those jobs develop a work ethic and develop those type of skills so that they can take them to a higher position. They were not career-related jobs. So this notion that we are forcing businesses to pay a certain rate, that's totally out of the Constitution. It doesn't have anything to do with the federal government. Those are private contracts between an employee and an employer. Those two need to negotiate what he is willing to pay, he or she, and what he and she is willing to accept. It doesn't have anything to do with the federal government. And at the end of the day, with the internet and social media and all these different things that are available, we are going to see more jobs being shipped overseas or being done online and other places. In other words, unemployment is going to skyrocket.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had a town hall meeting with our Congressman Mark Sanford a couple of months back, and one of the gentlemen that had attended happens to be a Tea Party member in our group, and he owns a small business. You know, he's got this little sandwich shop. And
yes,
he's had people that have worked for him going on two decades. And he said, you know, with Obamacare, with the threat of an increase in the minimum wage, he goes, I have to fight. I have to find every single penny I can trim out of my budget so I don't have to fire someone. But he says, sooner or later, I'm going to have to let one of these employees go. And how do I decide that? These are people that are dedicated to my business as much as I am dedicated to it. They're like family to me. How can I help protect their jobs? And it seems that this administration is doing anything and everything to destroy small business.
You're right. And you know what? Milton Friedman said it best. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And he's right. There is no such thing. And let me tell you something. When I get to the United States Senate, with your help and all the listeners that are listening help, I'm going to cut the red tape that are tying the hands of small businesses. Small businesses are the economic hub of this country. It's not the big corporations. It's the mom-and-pop local businesses. They don't have big lobbyists in Washington, D.C. They don't have big tax accountants. They don't have big tax lawyers. They have to, as your friend said at the town hall meeting, they have to squeeze every penny out. And that's why we have to have someone in Washington, D.C. that's looking out for these men and women that get up early, that go to sleep late, that make huge sacrifices, not only to create the goods and services that we all need, want, and purchase, but they also create jobs.
Absolutely. Now, Chris, you're a small business owner, right?
I am a small and absolutely everything that you, both of you are speaking, you know, are hitting the nail on the head, because I have about 14 employees, and we're just a small music school. And really the bottom line is what's going to happen if you get into this nonsense of basically income fixing, you know, numbers with employees,
right,
and overtime, is you're going to pass it on to the consumer. And that's what we would end up doing. You know, I really wouldn't want to ever cut anybody loose as an employee, but what we do is end up raising rates, and rates would go up, and that's the bottom line. That's where you're going to see the biggest hit, and you're already seeing it. I mean, just go to Walmart or any grocery store, and food prices and fuel prices. I mean, you're already seeing inflation, but if you start messing with overtime hours and forcing pay, I mean, it's passed on to the customer. They're going to pay that bill, and that's what we would do. That's what I would do. I would end up raising my rates more and more, and that's sort of the game of America right now. Everybody just seems to be nickel and diming each other, just piece by piece, whether it's your cable bill, your power bill, or just your local merchant down the street. Unfortunately, everybody kind of shaking everybody down a little bit. Everybody has to kind of nickel and dime up, and it's just not a good thing. And sooner or later, I mean, you can feel it coming again. It feels like we might hit another implode here, like 2008, where we hit a wall and something crashes. If we don't turn things around. I mean, you can feel it coming, especially when inflation starts to rear its ugly head. And they've made little, you know, hints that they might, you know, raise interest rates. And we'll just sort of see where all this stuff goes. So,
yeah.
I just have a few questions for you. Since I'm here in South Carolina and obviously I can't vote in the Tennessee primaries, just a few questions. I'm just curious, just maybe four quick sort of bullet point questions. What's your stance on immigration, current immigration or immigration reform?
Well, long story short is that we already have immigration laws already on the books. We don't need a new one. What I would do is make sure that we enforce the immigration laws that we already have in place. And therefore, the first thing that we should be concentrating on is the root of the problem, and that is we are a sovereign nation, and we are a welcoming nation. But I also don't believe that we should just have anyone to enter into this country, and we have no idea who is here. I'm all for people being able to come here to the land of opportunity, but I don't expect America to become the land of opportunists.
Right. No, I totally agree. I mean, my mom's not even an American citizen. I have an English mother, and she is here on a green card, and, you know, she came over by the rules and played by the rules. And, the last thing you want is people just sort of jumping the line. And if I went into England and stayed over my visa, trust me, the immigration in England and Europe is much stricter than here. They would find me and have me out of that country so quickly my head would spin, I mean, just from spending time over there. So, I mean, I totally agree. Just a couple other quick questions, because I know we don't have a ton of time. This is kind of a national bullet point, too. What's your view on Common Core right now and Common Core with Tennessee?
Go ahead, Brenda.
It's rotten to the core. It's just rotten to the core. And I it just boggles my mind that this thing has snuck its way into many states. And again, long story short, education should not be at the federal level. Education should remain at the state level, period, the end.
I totally agree.
Have you seen that new commercial the teachers have out going rah, 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 sis, boom, bah on Common Core?
Yes, I saw that. I almost fell out of my chair. Almost choked on my dinner.
I did. I almost turned around and threw something at the TV, but I remembered I paid over $2,500 for that TV a few years back, and I'm not throwing anything at it. I'll throw it at my husband instead.
Okay.
And I just have one. Here's my last sort of a little serious bullet point question, just sort of going down the line here. If you would have been in the U.S. Senate in 2008 at the end of the Bush administration, would you have been in favor of the TARP bailout, or were you?
Absolutely not. And let me tell you why. Businesses have to compete. You're not going to get bailed out. Many of my other small business friends did not get bailed out. You don't reward people for bad behavior. And this notion that if we didn't do something, that we would have a bigger economic chaos than we would have now is the same thing as a Loch Ness monster, the boogeyman, and all the rest. They're myths. That's all they are. If we had not bailed the banks out, other investors, private investors, would have come in, invested, and would have made money off of this catastrophe. That's what investors do. It's not the government's role, again, to pick winners and losers. And unfortunately, some of the companies may have gone out of business. Well, that's what capitalism is. Winners and losers are not picked by the government. They are picked and chosen or not by the marketplace. So no, I would not have supported that at all.
Yeah, you know what really ticked me off is that we had this whole boondoggle with GM being bailed out. And now GM, 7 out of the 10 cars that they manufacture are made in China. The majority of their whole line, except for research and development at this point, just about everything GM does is done in China.
That was our tax dollars.
And we supposedly got our money back. I don't see a single penny that went back into our coffers from them.
No, and I'm going to tell you another thing. The good thing about the capitalism is, and I said, and I briefly talked about it earlier, is that you put your goods and services on in the marketplace, and the consumers decide which products and which services stay and which ones leave. Unfortunately, we're seeing with big business, and again, I'm not against capitalism, but I am against big businesses paying elected officials, making big donations to elected officials' campaign, and in turn, instead of them working for us, they're working for the special interests, big business, major corporations, at the expense of us. And again, many of the tax laws, many of the regulations that we see in place now, it's just that politicians are pitting one industry against the other. That is not the free market. That is not capitalism. It's crony capitalism. And again, markets, companies, corporations have to compete in the marketplace and let the consumer decide which companies stay and which ones leave. It's just that simple.
Yeah, now someone put a little sarcastic remark in the chat room, our friend Vito. He said, but Brenda, Alex Sink said, who would cut our lawns and take care of our yards without an open border policy?
Well, you know what? Well, let me just say this. In the 70s, who was cutting our grass then? In the 60s, who was cutting our grass then? This notion that you're not going to get your grass cut, you're not going to get your hamburgers made, you're not going to get your salads tossed. It's a myth, along with the grizzly bear, Frosty the Snowman, even the Easter Bunny. They're myths, and they're put out there for people to believe, if we don't do this, then, I'm not going to get my grass cut. Well, that's not true. And if need be, get out there and cut your own grass.
I love it. Because I grew up during the 60s and 70s, and I was one of those kids that went, door-to-door, selling cookies or greeting cards or mowing lawns or delivering newspapers.
Raking leaves.
Now I think you'd be federally regulated if you went door-to-door selling cookies. I think you might have some sort of health code issues or fill out some forms and need proper business license. I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon with any kids. No more lemonade stands, as we've seen in the press, where they shut them down in Colorado.
You aren't going door-to-door. Right. Yes. You aren't going door to door. That's out.
I'll tell you one thing. I read a little bit up this morning on you, Brenda, and I spoke about this earlier this week on the Tuesday show. I just think it's amazing that you're out running. Win, lose, or draw. I just hope that more people, just like you, get involved and realize, hey, getting involved, whether it's running for dog catcher, town council, mayor, senator, president, it's just so important. And I also spoke on this on Tuesday, and regardless of people's past and people have made mistakes in their lives, no one's perfect. And if somebody says they're perfect, then I'm scared of that person. I'm going to run from them because nobody's perfect. It's just important to get people involved. And I think a lot of people would like to be involved, even if it's for town council, and they're scared of, this might be brought up, or this or that, or I did this in high school. And it shouldn't stop good people from running. We all have lived lives. We're not all perfect. And it doesn't mean that your heart's not in the right place, and that, we all grow up eventually, and we make mistakes here and there. Hopefully we learn from them, and those become better people in my mind. So I just really commend you for putting yourself out there.
Absolutely, no problem. And the thing about it is, I'll quickly say this in closing. My life is a testament that America works. And every challenge, every difficulty, every struggle that has come my way, I didn't turn those into becoming a victim. I try to use every struggle, every challenge, every difficulty to overcome them. I didn't ask the taxpayers to bail me out. I don't expect to, when I get to Washington, D.C., to redistribute wealth, no matter how noble the cause is. My life is a testament that America works when you work with America. And again, anybody that asks me anything about my journey to the United States Senate, I'm happy to talk about them, because it just lets us know that where else in America, in closing, could a mere American like myself grow up in the projects of Atlanta, Georgia, and now be a United States Senate candidate? I mean, only in America could this even be possible. So I'm happy. I'm excited about being in the race, and I am down with America.
Amen
to
that.
You've got yourself a pretty crowded field. When is your primary?
August the 7th.
Wow, that late in the year.
I
was trying to count how many people are there, but I see that there's 7 independents, and I lost count on the Republicans and Democrats. Wow, that is some field. I mean, there's a lot of people going after Lamar Alexander, and a lot of people are really pissed off, I would say.
Yeah, and you know, and I thought about that too, but you know, when I look on the athletic track, when I see all of those runners out on the track, you know what I think about? That one runner staying in his or her lane. Don't look to the left. Don't look to the right. Don't look behind you. You keep your eyes focused on the end goal, and that's winning and crossing the line. And that's what I look at. Yes, the race is crowded, but you know what? Every day I look at this campaign and I say, Brenda, how can we improve? Stay in your lane. Try to do your best to get your message out there. And then in August, let the voters decide. In fact, may the best man or woman win. I had to throw that one in there.
Absolutely. But you know what? You really do scare people, because I was looking for some pictures to put up on the show page of you, and I said, you probably have all of your competition scared out of the bejesus. A black woman with a gun. Girl, you rock.
Hey, I'm a big Second Amendment supporter, because you know what? If we don't support the Second Amendment, the First and everyone after that, they fall by the wayside. So we have to keep a strong Second if we want any of the others to even have any meaning.
Yeah, now I had someone put something up on Facebook the other day mocking our defense of the Second Amendment. And they kind of like said, doesn't the Tea Party have other more important issues? And, of course, me not being someone to hold my tongue, laced into the person says, oh, I'm not allowed to be secure in my person.
Exactly.
If someone is to attack me, I'm not allowed to defend myself. And this is a silly and stupid issue. It's not. It is a fundamental basic right to our existence.
It is. And you know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is a great opportunity for us to be not only conservative activists, but also teachers, to teach people that this notion that defending ourselves is something, you know, that we should shy away from. No, I have a God-given right to protect myself, my family, my children, my property. And to think that now I have to go and demonstrate that I am worthy to protect my family, that is un-American. That right has already been established.
Yeah, and they're attacking. I'm sorry. I was looking in the chat room, and they're attacking us on our Second Amendment rights. For example, there was that recent news story of the gentleman out in Ares Armor out in California, where he had a court injunction against the ATF raiding his place, and they violated the court injunction.
Right. But you know, again, it's so important now more than ever, because, as you know, the education system has failed to educate the masses of their constitutional rights. And I'm excited not only to be running for a Senate, to bring a lot of these things to the forefront where people may have, believe it or not even known or didn't understand So not only am I a candidate, but I'm slash teacher. So I'm just excited to be a part of this. I'm excited to espouse God Bless America. I'm excited to espouse conservatism. And let's just see how things play out between now and August.
That is absolutely true. Let everything play out. Now, one of the things I noticed is that a lot of our senators and congressmen, when they ever gear legislation, they always think of an urban setting in which they initiate it. But they've got to remember that the majority of the United States is all rural. And that's something you understand.
Coming from Missouri and even here in Tennessee, there's a lot of rural farmers, a lot of rural areas. It's still farmland and things like that here in Tennessee. Vast amount.
Vast amount is an understatement.
Absolutely. And let me just, before I close, I would like to give the listeners my website address again, and there's a countless number of ways that they can come in and support the campaign. They can send me a message. Of course, they can hit that donate button an unlimited amount of times. We don't get tired of that.
I guess not. But I saw also you have it up there that people can actually make calls on your behalf.
They can. They can make calls. There's a plethora of different ways that they can help with the campaign. So you don't have to be in Tennessee to run up and down I-40 with me. You can do that from the comfort of your phone, your iPad, your laptop, your computer, and mobilize from your state for Brenda Leonard for the United States Senate here in Tennessee.
Well, amen to that. It's up in the chat room again. I put it back up there. Brenda Leonard, L-E-N-A-R-D. And it's also up on our show page. And like I said, I sent it to one of our Senate candidates, you know, telling him this is a really awesome website and your social networking and your teaching and everything on there is
awesome.
Just outrageous.
Thank you.
It's fantastic. Whoever, did you think that up or did you have someone do that for you?
No, I'm not that clever. I'm just a candidate.
Well, whoever designed it, you picked a very good person. And if you pick staff like that, before you even make it to the Senate, when you make it to the Senate, you will have an absolutely fantastic staff up there.
It's a blessing from God. Thank you so much. And I
thank
you for this opportunity. And I'll be in touch. And God bless America.
God bless America, and God bless you, too. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Brenda Leonard running for Senate out of Tennessee. And again, her website is Brenda Leonard, LENARD.com. So take a look at it. And, you know, I don't know if you went into the contribution and the other parts of the website on her and took a look at how she set it up with the social networking. I'm telling you, Chris, it is phenomenal.
I have seen it, yeah. And she's a ball of energy, too. She is fired up. And like we said, I think it's really important just for the average American to get involved, whether it's, like we said, running for Senate or just getting involved and going to our website and seeing what you can do to help, even if it's not, a donation, just say, like making calls on behalf of candidates that you support anywhere across the country, because it really does take, it's going to take a national movement. It's not going to be just a regional or local thing. It's going to, for a grassroots conservative Tea Party candidates to succeed, it's going to take that national push by far.
On her website, she set up these coalitions, and she has it for African Americans. She's got it for educators, faith leaders. This is something that, you know, people kind of like shy away from. You know, mentioning religion and politics in the same sentence seems to be something that's absolutely taboo. But it wasn't taboo for our founding fathers when they made our Declaration of Independence and Constitution. So, you know, she's not shying away from getting them involved. She's got farmers and ranchers, medical field, healthcare professionals. She goes after parents, small business owners, sportsmen, college students, veterans and military, I mean, young professionals. And it's so very well done that she's basically reaching across all aisles and saying, hey, we're all Americans first, and let's take our country back.
Yeah, she did. The site does look great. I looked at it this morning, and she's done a fantastic job with it. And, I wish her all the best. Like I said, I'm here in South Carolina with you, so I don't know the Tennessee race that well. And it does sound like it's a crowded field, but a crowded field's a good thing. It's good to get as many people out there running for stuff. And you know, we just vet them and find out who's who and what they stand for and where we think, you know, they would help best represent each state and each person in their district, you know, because it's important to make these candidates represent us and not just go up there and represent special interest. As she spoke on, you know, there's so much special interest money. It's just really important to get these candidates, these Ted Cruzes of the world, that they were elected to go to Washington to do a certain thing, and that's what he went up there to do, and that's why he read Green Eggs and Ham and stayed up for 24 hours, because that's what he was elected to do. So when people say, oh, Ted Cruz is a nutcase, he is just doing what he was sent there by the people that elected him in Texas to do, and that you cannot respect that more, you know.
Absolutely.
Whether you... You know, that's the bottom line, whether it's whatever party it is. I mean, Barack Obama said that he would fundamentally transform America. I mean, I got to give him credit. He's doing it, and he said he'd do it, and he's doing it. So, you know, we need to fundamentally transform it to a proper direction, back to the founders' answers, you know, back to the founding fathers. And I think 2014 is a big – this is going to be a big year. I think November is going to be a real turning point, tipping point for this country. Whether we can
Absolutely.
Get this thing back on track or not, or, you know, we
yeah,
can be deep doo-doo if not.
I don't know if you saw it, but we've got our county council, a bunch of seats are open on that, and we've got some guys that are so entrenched in there. They claim to be conservatives. They claim that they vote Republican, but they have fouled up our county finances and other stuff in here so badly because they're greedy. And now people are starting to step forward. I had a phone call yesterday from someone that was on the school board in the past, and he had retired. He says, you know, I've done my stuff. I'm now want to sit back and enjoy my old age. He called me yesterday. And he goes, what do you think if I were to run against so-and-so? And this was my own, in my district, my part of the county.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, how do you feel if I went up against your councilman? And I said, go for it. Now I pick up today's paper, and I see someone out in Hilton Head, a Tea Party person, filing to challenge one of those members that has messed up our county so badly. So people are starting to step forward, and it's on the county level, it's on the state level, it's on the federal level, and people are waking up and saying, we cannot sit on the sidelines anymore. And that's why my co-host Cool Mike is in court. He's battling the city because they're violating election law, and he says, I'm not going to stand for it. You're not going to make a mockery of the system. And I let people know that we have the phone lines open because I thought Brenda would stay with us a little bit longer, so I'm kind of short on material. So feel free to call in. Call-in line is 917-889-3675. I'm not exactly short on material. I've got a ton, a stack of papers here.
You're never short on material.
What do I dig? You know what I will do? I don't know if you caught this, Chris. This was put up on a bar restaurant here in South Carolina, and the fact that this idiot decided to put it in a state that is so pro-gun, he has to be brain dead. This one, this is a sign he wrote on the door. He posted this in several places. He said, no concealed weapons allowed. If you are such a loser that you feel a need to carry a gun when you go out, I do not want your business, douchebag.
I did see that.
My goodness. And, you know, he got attacked in oh so many ways.
It's been all – in here in South Carolina, it's very viral. I've seen that picture numerous times on the internet. I am way pro Second Amendment. I actually am not a huge gun owner. My brother is, and I'm huge Second Amendment. Huge fan of the right to bear arms. The only guns I actually own are muskets in my house. So if somebody ever broke in, they probably have to wait a few minutes for me to pack it and load it, and then they probably have to be about, you know, come 10 feet close enough to me to shoot them with the Civil War musket. But I am a strong supporter of it. And I saw that, and I don't know what that person was thing, especially you're in the heart of Dixie down here in the South. So,
well, Chris, I'll tell you what, next time I head up to the Charleston area and I'm up in Mount Pleasant up by you, I'll take you to a gun shop and I'll help you pick out a little something you can pack and then you can have handy so you don't have to worry about loading your musket. And if you need me, I will take you to a firing range and help you learn to shoot.
Oh, no, I've shot. No, I grew up in North Alabama, so we used to go shooting all the time, and I've shot many clay pigeons and shot targets. But at this point, yeah, I just realized I only have muskets in my house. But the musket might work.
If your wife doesn't mind, I'll take you shopping. But we've got a Skype caller in. Let me bring the Skype caller in on the line. You're on the line, Skype caller, with your host Annie and Chris Holly. Who am I speaking to?
Well, you don't have anybody for me to interrogate today, but I thought I'd call in anyway and say hi, Annie. And
Joe, you know we love you. We're getting a little feedback off your end. Is your speakers up?
Not my phone. I've done whatever I could in order to try to remedy the situation, but it just keeps on humming, you know. Sorry.
Well,
so you don't have anybody there for me to interrogate, which is, I guess, in a way, good. Any old time you want me to do that, I'm always glad to call in for that.
Yeah, you did harass our last guest pretty much, and I did have to mute you a few times so he could have time to answer the question you asked. You do ask a question, let them answer it, Joe.
I'm the kind of guy, I get my point across in less than a minute. In my opinion, if you really know the topic, you can do it in less than 2 minutes. In order to really try to transmit your message to an audience, you should really be able to do it. And I have to tell you one thing. I didn't listen to the archives fully, but I listened to parts of it. And I did get a lot of stuff out of that guy that I don't know. Like I said, I didn't listen to the entire archive. I don't know if it came out prior to my showing up. So it's a good thing that I did show up, because when he was revealing his particular real kernel of his particular plan, I think that's kind of informative. But you know me, I like to get people on the hot seat and just find out what they're really made of.
Because I actually have a question for you, and I meant to ask Brenda this question.
I'm going to have to mute you because it's
okay.
Getting a little bit worse.
So this is a question for Joe, and Annie, of course, can opine as well on this. But what's Joe's thought on term limits, at least for, we'll say, with just the Senate and the Congress? We don't have to get into term limits for state Senate and all that, but U.S. Congress and U.S. Senate. I'm curious what his thoughts are on term limits.
Well, I'm kind of pro and con at the same time. I can understand that, you get up there and then you end up with the Washington, D.C. mentality, and then you become just one of the good old boys. But I also understand individuals that have the commitment and the desire to do what we sent them to do, the Ted Cruzes, the Mark Sanfords, the Mike Lees, the Trey Gowdies. And there, when you have someone in there that can take the heat that's being dished at them and still maintain their integrity, you don't want them to leave.
That's the double-edged sword.
Yeah,
that's the double-edged sword. You're gonna dance with Nancy Pelosi. If you don't have term limits, you're gonna have Nancy Pelosi, living in your backyard in California forever. But then if you have term limits, then you will lose the Ron Paul supporters out there. You would have lost him a long time ago because he spent over 20 years off and on end. So in Congress,
so
you're going to lose some good ones for the bad.
Sword. But that only means that we have to be more vigilant and get candidates up there that are good. And when they are bad, we end up doing a revolt and evict them by our vote. Let me bring Joe on, see if he got his phone going. Joe, what was your answer on term limits?
I'm just about the same as yours, because I'm for it and against it. I think term limits are good for the bad people and bad for the good people. But then again, everybody thinks that their particular party and their representative of that party is a good person. But even if you did have term limits, 6 years is a long time for somebody to do a lot of damage. So
yeah, look at our Lindsey Graham.
Sure. And Lindsey Graham, I'm sure, had a bunch of supporters until just recently, and the coffee table gossip on that is that he was blackmailed into turning into somebody that people really don't like from his district. Because remember that semi-scandal about the nukes? About the nukes being transported from one air base to another air base without people really knowing about it? Up until then, most people love that guy.
No, you have to know what they're saying down here. And I went nose to nose. And Chris, you've seen how short Lindsey Graham is, and you know how short I am. You've seen me. When I can stand there and look at him straight in the eye, and I'm equal to him, eyeball to eyeball, he's a short little shit. And I tell you what, Chris, you would love this. He had his fundraiser here down on Bay Street at the restaurant called The Q on Bay, downtown Beaufort.
Yeah, so I know where that would be. I've been in there.
Oh, yeah. So it used to be Kathleen's. It used to be Ollie's.
Yeah.
So that,
used
that's
to be
going way back. Yeah. So he had his fundraiser there. So after I got off the air on Friday, I went down to the queue, my husband and I, and here he comes. First thing he does when he walks in for the fundraiser, he closes the bar. You are holding a fundraiser in a restaurant bar, and you close the bar. Now, how smart is that? How many people do you think they're going to donate to this little idiot if they're all sober? The only way you can donate is if you're drunk. So, of course, he flits through, so there was no really stopping to shake his hand, say hi, or ask him a question. So my husband and I said, that's it. I'm out of here. So we go to leave, and he's standing in the aisle on the way to the exit door. I guess he figured he was going to get people coming and going, press the flesh, and get a donation. Well, of course, you know me. I am not at a loss for words often. So I had two questions I wanted to ask him. And I asked him in such a way I knew I was going to trap him. The first one, you know that we have the runoff election for his seat, the Senate seat. We're going to have the primary on June 10th, I believe. And then supposedly 2 weeks later, against election law, they're going to hold the runoff. 14 days. Election law states it should be 45 days. So I asked him if he favored the runoff being 14 days or 45. Are you in support of Joe Carroll's lawsuit with the Department of Justice to increase the time from 14 to 45 days? He jumped on it and said no. And then I finished the question. Enable to have the military to get their vote in on time? Oh, yes, I support the military. But you want the runoff in 14 days and not 45, according to election law. And then he goes into the song and dance routine. Now, catch this. He says the military is going to get a different ballot than everyone else. We get a ballot on the primary that says we vote for one candidate. But the military's ballot will have choice number one and choice number two. So they get to pick two people that they feel they want to see to go into the runoff. Well, what happens if neither of those persons make it to the runoff? So in other words, they get no vote.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like I declare shenanigans.
So what are you saying?
He explained this ballot, special military, and he knew he was losing me. My eyes are glazed over. So I said, "Another going to deny the vote." Well, they're not going to be denied the vote. They have a ballot with two choices on it. You're going to deny the vote. Primary to say who will go up against the Democrats in the election. Oh, no, they get this. And he's trying to convince me that this is going to work. Well, let's hope that this lawsuit works and it goes to 45 days. Because if it's only 2 weeks, he's going to have the upper hand because he'll have higher name recognition.
Sure, yeah.
He wants
in and out as fast as he
can. He wants to make sure he gets as many votes as possible. So even if he does make it to the runoff, no one has enough time to learn about who his opponent is going into the runoff.
Right.
If we can extend it 45 days, then that opponent will have a better chance of winning and kicking him out. And he knows that. So the second question I asked, and because my husband's family is from Latvia and my husband was born in a displaced persons camp because Latvia was taken over by first the Germans and then the Soviets and then given away in the Treaty of Yalta to the Russians. I asked him about this aid package to the Ukraine. And everyone's going, oh, we've got to send the Ukraine money. We've got to do it right now. So I did a little research. Why are they pushing this so fast and so hard? Well, what no one knows is that the International Monetary Fund has had a reform package sitting in the Senate for 3 years. They've tied the Ukraine economic package to this IMF reform package. And the reason why it sat in the Senate for 3 years is because it cedes our sovereignty to the IMF and to the IMF.
Well, hold on, Annie. You were breaking up just then. Can you repeat what you were saying? Because you were breaking up.
Oh, it's damn Skype. They tied They tied the IMF reform package to the Ukraine economic package. So the IMF package cedes our sovereignty and increases our responsibility to the IMF. So I said, I asked him again a two-part question. Are you in favor of this Ukraine economic package that is tied to the IMF? Would you vote for it, or would you vote to have it separated? He goes, oh, I would vote to have it separated. I said, so if it, how would you vote then if it, you are unable to separate it and the IMF reform package stays with it? Oh, I'll still vote for it. Oh, so Senator, you would vote to cede our sovereignty to the IMF, or are you voting to not cede our authority to the IMF? And he couldn't answer. I got him again. At that point, one of his aides started to shuffle me towards the front
door.
Yeah.
I'm sure they were in trouble. They spot you at another Graham event. You're going to get a little tap on your shoulder. Ma'am, we need you to exit the building.
Well, the funny thing is, I never...
From here on out. No more questions from her.
I never told him my name. That's the whole thing. He never once asked my name, and I never told him my name.
Oh, they have a but, they have a picture of you now in the NSA.
Yeah,
file.
They do. They do. They have facial recognition software right up there.
Right, yeah, they're waiting on you. I hate to sign off. I have to go earn some tax money to help with Pelosi's Botox surgery, so I have to run.
Oh, that's
and
a long
earn
thought.
Some income.
Oh. Well, Chris,
so we can
say
fund
hi to
more
your
Botox,
bride.
But I will, and I just real quick, I want to plug, and I want Joe on my page. You can find me at Tea Party Rockers. That's on Facebook page, and we're 24,000 strong and growing every day, and we have a lot of arguing on there. So Joe, come on, get in there.
Oh,
and get in
yeah,
the
oh
mix.
Good, I'm good
we,
for that.
We argue continuously on that page, 24 hours a day. It's we're the Waffle House of arguing. We never close. So I look forward to. I hopefully, I'll be filling in on Tuesday, and if cool mic's out, and I will talk to everybody on Tuesday, and everybody have a wonderful weekend. And I will speak to everybody soon, and just
right,
follow me out
care.
There. On the, and you guys have a great weekend. It's great speaking to you again, Jeff.
Take it easy, Chris.
All right.
Chris,
bye-bye,
take care.
Annie. Thank you for having
all
me
right,
on.
Take care. All right. Chris also has a website called Chris Holly Music, and you can find a lot of his music up there. He's a great guy. He played – his group played at our South Carolina Tea Party Convention this past January. He's very, very talented. And he and his wife are just two of the sweetest, sweetest people possible. I want to welcome anyone else that's willing to call in, like Joe. It's 917-889-3675. Go ahead, Joe.
You know what I would recommend? Why don't you put a libertarian on your show and put him or her on the hot seat so that instead of my grilling conservatives or liberals, whoever, you know, that you may want to have on your particular show, take a libertarian and put them on the hot seat and then see if they actually will stand up to scrutiny as well. What's good... for or against the conservatives or for or against the liberals should be the same way for or against the libertarians.
Ah, that's the problem. Libertarians, I don't know what to say about them. The round pole nuts of the universe. I had a couple of friends of mine the last election cycle, and they were all Ron Paul supporters. And I said, wait a minute, you guys are Tea Party people, and mm-hmm. you're for Ron Paul. And I said, are you for X, Y, Z? And I forget what I was asking him. I know part of it was for our national defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, are you in favor of having a strong military to keep us out of half these messes around the world? You know, speak softly, carry the big suit. Oh, yeah, yeah. But then why are you supporting him closing down bases? Oh, no, we're not. All right, which side are you on, girls? And, of course, the more I asked them, and they happened to be very, very good friends of mine, and then the more I started asking them these things, and I said, are you in favor of legalizing marijuana nationwide? Oh, no, it's bad for our kids. But you're saying that you're supporting a libertarian candidate who does. And I just started to knock them down. And I said, all right, I want to remain friends, so that's the last question I'm going to ask you.
All right, I tell you what, anytime, because I'm a libertarian, and we have some libertarian talk show hosts, and anytime you want me for a hot seat to get back at me for grilling your guests a couple of times, that's okay by me, because I can answer the questions in ways which I hope aren't too confusing.
Well, take, for example, the legalization of marijuana. Studies show that it does dwarf the brain functioning of kids, and they don't develop their brains properly, which is probably why they're hooked on the dope to begin with. They also now have problems in Colorado. A lot of these kids are getting in their cars and driving, and they have an increase in car accidents directly attributed to pot. I mean, there's one woman
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to bring up, because I don't know of any recorded incidences in which kids or adults, once they've smoked pot, have gotten into a traffic accident. But if you have the stats, that's something good that you should bring to the show, because alcohol has been around for a long time. Marijuana, of course, has at one time was legal, and then it went underground. And again, I don't know of anybody who gets into a car and gets into an accident just for smoking pot. But the thing about the legalization of marijuana, that's not a specific issue with libertarians. It is about getting the government off your back. In other words, if you want to do something as dangerous as taking drugs or drinking alcohol, and you want to endanger your own body, do it. But no, we don't say smoke marijuana, then get into a car. We're saying if you want to do danger to yourself, go ahead, injure yourself, and leave other people alone and keep the government out, because there's always the slippery slope. So that's what we're concerned about. Mainly the issue is from other people pointing to marijuana and saying, so you want to legalize marijuana. I want to have it legalized or decriminalized in order to make sure that it's not part of the whole drug arena where people are shooting everybody else up in order to make illegal profits like they did back in Prohibition. It's not that marijuana is the favorite drug, and nor is there any real proof that marijuana is a doorway drug, that it automatically leads to heroin and coke and all that kind of good stuff. But, you know, we don't care if marijuana exists or doesn't exist. We just want government to say, we just want to tell government, get out, leave us alone, you know, just bug off.
Well, I just posted up in the chat room something that was in the Washington Times back in January. A couple of kids high on pot ended up hitting a cop car. And if you just simply Google Colorado pot and car accidents, you'll see numerous articles. There was another one in the Denver Post about another incident. There was some studies that have been popped up on that. If you just simply Google, I did put that one article up in the chat room. You know, what is happening is that it's getting into the hands of kids. Mm-hmm. And now you can say the same thing happens with cigarettes and alcohol, but it's to the point where it's like everyone going, man, I can go and get high, and I can't get busted, so I'm just going to do it, and the heck with, you know, whatever danger I put myself or someone else in. And it's attitude that has to be changed. Personally, what you do in the confines of your own home is your business. The government has no business in coming in and telling me. And if I turned around and my husband said, well, I want to go smoke a joint, and my thing is, honey, just go out to the porch or the garage. I don't want to be around it.
Right. And, of course, there's responsible drinking and smoking a pot. Just like we don't want the kids to be drinking for, you know, below the age of 18 or 17 because they can't handle it. If you're a responsible adult, you have the you have the choice of either smoking pot, taking drugs, or drinking alcohol. And usually, you know, I don't consider most humans to be developed until after 25 to begin with. Not that I'm saying that the legal age for everything should be 21 or 19. But the fact that we want government out, and yes, there are drugs out there which could lead to accidents, which naturally could lead to impairment of brain cells, etc. We think that the slippery slope is more dangerous, as has been shown in the last few years, than the incidences which would happen as a result of freely legalizing marijuana or drugs or alcohol. It's the slippery slope versus the choice of Americans. Because there will be people, you know, who they take a look at obesity. I mean, food is a weapon now. Food is dangerous to people's health because they don't know how to keep their mouth shut. That's my diet. Keep your mouth shut.
What we should be doing is instead of regulating and legislating, we should be enforcing personal responsibility.
Yeah, and we should let people know through education, this is what you do to yourself, this is what you do to others, and shame should be brought back to America, just like it was back in the 50s. If you were getting, and it wasn't welfare around then, it was called public assistance, I think. If you were getting public assistance, you were practically a pariah in your community because you didn't work. You were lazy. And that should be brought back today. But what happens today? What is happening today? We have 104 million people on the dole in some way getting checks from the government, either by working for the government or by getting some sort of welfare assistance, food stamps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that, because of the way that the currency system is made up, since it's debt-driven, is ruining America. You know, I don't blame people for going on welfare. I mean, if the low-hanging fruit is there and you really need help, go for it. But just don't make it a generational thing. There are families that, Jesus, for three generations, they're making it part of their family tradition to go to the mailbox. I don't know if you can go to the mailbox now. To go to the mailbox on the 1st and the 15th to get your welfare check. What kind of life is that for your kids do you want?
No, you're absolutely right. And I can remember when I was married to my first husband, he turned around to me one day and he said, "You know, our income is to the point where we can apply for food stamps." And I said, "No, I absolutely not." I put my foot down. And this is a guy that was a Marine.
Right.
All right. And at that point, he was in the reserves and he was working a full-time job. I had a business and I was working part-time. You know, after I closed my business, I would take a second job. At one point, I had a third job, and just to make ends meet. And I said, "No, I will. If I have to eat, you know, oatmeal for dinner, that I'll do that." I said, "But I am not going to go on to food stamps." But that's the way I was raised.
You know what? Both of you are right, because the pride is the incentive to make people get the freak off their couch and do some work, even if it takes two or three jobs. Yet at the same time, as I've already stated, if the low-hanging fruit is there and you absolutely need it, I say swallow your pride, take the money, get on it for a while, get your feet, get back on your feet, get off it, and then do the American way.
Well, that's why I also support the welfare-to-work programs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we should do. It's like, all right, this is temporary assistance. This is only to help you get on your feet, as you said. But in the interim, we have, say, for example, the city is short one janitor. Well, then that's what you're going to do. You're going to sweep floors and empty garbage cans.
That's right.
The city needs someone to do some clerical work. All right? You can file. You know how to read. You know how to write. You can answer a telephone. You can file these file folders. You know? You know how to answer a telephone.
Too.
You can be a receptionist. There's many things people do.
And you're right. And there's a myth that's being perpetrated throughout all of America that people don't want the jobs. Natural-born Americans, white Americans, college-educated Americans don't want these jobs. BS. If you keep importing immigrants, then deporting them, then allowing them back in the country again, and then having a program, well, multiple programs, in which you are robbing Americans of jobs, like 6 million jobs, manufacturing jobs, have been sent overseas because of taxes and regulations. And the economy is, because of the way that the government is, this is what you get. But don't tell me that people who are hard on their luck won't take these jobs. It's not because the people don't take the jobs. It's because the employers, they want people for $4 an hour. Plus, if you're a Mexican or some other type of immigrant, you can be threatened by your employer. You're going back to Mexico, bub, if you don't do what I tell you. Now, you can't say that to an American. So they're not offering these lower class jobs to those who would take them. There's a lot of PhDs who are driving cabs. There's a lot of master's degrees who are washing dishes. But, you know, for somebody sum it all up in a nutshell, it doesn't make sense when the employment rate is truly around 20%. Forget about the 6% official rate that the Bureau of Labor comes out with. It's about close to 20%. It doesn't make sense when you have that kind of an unemployment rate to keep importing immigrants who can't read, can't write, and don't give a damn about America. When you have that and they're in here, they have to take a job or steal. So when they take a job, they're taking a job away from an American who absolutely would take a job he ordinarily wouldn't take because he or she has to support his family. So I don't buy into that myth.
No, I don't either. And I did a show a while back, sometime last year, about the immigration crisis. And everyone says, oh, they're law-abiding. They do this, they do that. And I actually pulled up the prison statistics. And it's showing overwhelming. The largest population that is growing in prison are Hispanic, the Latinos.
Yep.
And the majority of the people that are being incarcerated that are Latino are illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And
in the federal prisons, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. state and local also is facing the same problem.
Okay.
Yes, state and local. And I showed the percentage of population, and then I compared it to this prison population. And it was so skewed. The lowest number, of course, being white, but that was pretty close to what the population was, person per person, you know, same percentage.
Yeah,
but
ratio,
when you turned around and you looked at the Hispanic, it was blown all over the place. And so it's showing that the majority that are coming over are committing crimes.
Well, they have
they're not the law-abiding people that the left has us, you know, believing they are. It's a lie.
And Geraldo Rivera says, this is the opposite of what you're saying. He says that the immigrants, the rate of incarceration is about the same as the normal American. That's what he says. Now, I believe he's wrong. And even if he's right, that's not a great argument for allowing people who come over here who cannot read, cannot write, practically are functionally illiterate in their own language. And when they come over here and they're definitely functionally illiterate in our language, what are they going to do? They either have to get on welfare, or they have to steal, or they have to take extremely low-paying jobs in which they're treated like dirt because, you know, they're afraid of deportation. And when you have something like the unofficial figure of around 20 million of these types of people, not just the Hispanics, but immigrants from anywhere, I don't like immigration even if it's legal, immigrants from everywhere populating the United States, you've got to take a little at the look at the laws of physics. Two objects cannot occupy the same space at the same time. So when you're having one particular person who comes from a country taking that job is being taken by, of course, him, which means that job is not being taken by somebody else who was born here.
Plain and simple. Who pays their taxes here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and pays the taxes. And you cannot tell me that all these illegal immigrants are paying federal income tax. They're not. I mean, my girlfriend found that her Social Security number was showing up on an illegal immigrant's, you know, job. But she's not going to get that money in her Social Security when she retires.
No.
You know, it's a complete, absolute lie. Now, I have my mother and father, when they moved from New York and they moved down to the Caribbean, they rented out their house before they sold it. And my mother insisted in renting it to this couple, and they were from Guatemala. She never asked if they were there legally or not. I had another couple, two young girls that were going to college locally that wanted to rent it, and their father was going to fix it up, and he wanted to do all these great things. And he says, if I like the house, you know, in about a year or so, I may just buy it from you. So we had not only someone that was going to work on the house, but they wanted to buy the house. But she said, insisted on this other couple. Well, what the couple didn't know is that my partner in the police department at the time was a little Colombian kid and spoke fluent Spanish. Well, they were complaining about cockroaches. So we go over there, and this kid, my partner, had a side business exterminating. She said, you know, Eddie, come on over to the house for me, and can you just spray it for the cockroaches and let me know whatever it is. I'll pay you for it. So he's walking around, and it's three floors. Plus an attic, and he's spraying all over the place. And he goes, you know, Ann, I counted something like 20 mattresses.
20 what?
And this was 20 mattresses. And he said, not including ones that, you know, I saw shoved into closets and in the eaves and everything else. He says, I counted 20 on the floor. And I said, oh, it's supposed to be only one couple and their baby. And, hey, I'm telling you people, you know, what the left is trying to tell you about immigration is a complete falsehood, absolute falsehood.
You know, it's driving the liberals about this, and, you know, God bless the peace picking hearts, you know, they are kind of compassionate towards their neighbor as long as somebody else is paying for their neighbor's largesse. But the thing is that they don't seem to realize that when people are over here, they have to use up our water, our food resources, our highways, our educational system, in which they're not really getting that much of an education, and everything else. I mean, there's a person who's been going around on tour, and he's been doing this for the past few years. I don't know if he stopped, but let's say about 2 years ago he was going around on tour, and he was showing the billions of dollars that immigrants just coming across the Mexican border, how much they were costing us in taxes and in the usage of our resources. Now, people will then use the excuse, well, they've come over here to have a better standard of living. Well, no freaking shit. That's like a burglar going into your house and stealing your plasma TV because he wants a better standard of living. Who cares?
Absolutely.
Every nation should look out for its own natural-born citizens, plain and simple. French for the French, Germans for the Germans, Americans for the Americans. And whatever happens, which are of very dire consequences to other countries, I'm sorry, but I'm glad that I was born here by, you know, the luck of the draw. Now, people say to me, well, when did your grandparents come here? I say around the 1890s or so. So, well, you're going to try to restrict immigration? And I say, yeah. They were lucky. I'm lucky. And they say to me, what happened, Joe, if they didn't make it here? I say, then I wouldn't have been born here, and I would have been out of luck. That's the way it is.
Yeah, out of my grandparents, only one was born here. The other three all, two from Italy and one from Germany. So I'm only second-generation American, and I am lucky, I am blessed to have the opportunity to be born here, to be able to exercise these rights that our forefathers had built into the Constitution. My husband was born in a displaced persons camp right after World War II, mm-hmm. and they emigrated here, I think it was 1959. But at that time, in order to come here, they had to have a sponsor. They had to have a job. They had to have a sponsor, and they had to prove that they would not live off of, you know, any state
right.
or federal largesse, shall mm-hmm. I call it. And if they didn't live up to those things, back they would go.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
All right? So there is a way which we do it. And if they want to come over, let's go back to that sponsorship again. Have mm-hmm. someone raise their hand and say, yes, I will make sure they have a place to live. I will make sure that they have a job when they get here. They will not receive food stamps, mm-hmm. welfare, Section 8 housing. You know,
right.
they will not get any of that. And then within a certain time period, they must apply for citizenship or leave.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm even against that, because like I said, I'm against all types of immigration, legal and illegal now. There's 350 million people in our country, okay? And 250,000 foreign students, I believe is the number, 250,000 foreign students taking up residence here, going to our colleges. Now, they're free to go back home or they're free to stay here. I don't care. You do not, if you are from another country, have the same loyalty to the United States as you would if you were born here. Your kids may have more loyalty than, you know, the original immigrants, maybe. But now, since there are so many immigrants here, even their kids, they don't have the feeling of putting your hand over your heart and pledging allegiance to the flag. It is a damn shame what's going on. And I don't even blame the immigrants. I blame Congress. All of our problems, all of them, are from Congress. They're the ones who enact the laws, construct the laws, implement the laws. Well, actually, they don't. It's lobbyists, okay? So Congress doesn't even really run America. It's the lobbyists. But it's the Congress that allows them to be blackmailed. It allows them to be extorted. It allows them to be bribed. Congress is full of vipers, treasonous. I'm not talking facetiously. I'm talking about treasonous bastards. They have to be kicked out, or there has to be a revolution. Because the way our government and our country is going, it is accelerating its death.
Demise? Spiral. Yeah, it is. We're on a downward spiral, and I don't know if we can actually stop it. You know, I do have hope, and I do pray that we do mm-hmm. find a way to stop it, and we have to do it starting this election cycle. No, listen to these fools that say, oh, you're going to split the vote, and you're going to do that. No. We take back the country right now, this mm-hmm. November, this year. You don't listen to these talking heads and say, oh, we have to wait and use all of our power in the 2016 presidential election. No, we start today. Actually, we should have started several years ago. How about trying several decades ago?
Decades,
you know, coming out of the
right.
50s into yeah. the 60s. And that's when even under FDR, under Teddy Roosevelt, who was a progressive, he wasn't a Republican. He just ran on the Republican ticket. He was a progressive. And anyone that worships at the altar of Teddy Roosevelt, I feel sorry for you. I mean, sure, he did a couple of good things, speak softly and carry a big stick. Mm-hmm. But didn't he start the socialistic downturn with the nationalizations of all the parks?
I'm not too hip on the brief background of Teddy Roosevelt, but I'll tell you one thing. There's a book that came out a few months ago about Franklin Roosevelt, his cousin, and
mm-hmm.
this is amazing. It was written by, I forget the woman's name, but it's called Betrayal of America. And what she had done, she had reviewed the declassified archives of Russia and the declassified archives of the United States and found out that FDR was peppered with agents from the Soviet Union and
Absolutely.
Peppered with people who loved Stalin. If they weren't assets or agents of the Soviet Union, FDR himself was practically a fan of Stalin.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was – that I've known about for years. You know, you go back to even Richard Nixon going after what the heck was his name? The Pumpkin Patch. Oh, jeez. Who happened to have been a Soviet agent. They hid their notes inside a pumpkin patch. Oh, I'll think of the guy's name. Whitaker Chambers.
Oh, okay.
Whitaker Chambers and the Alger Hiss. Thank you, Bigfoot. Alger Hiss also. And they all directly back to FDR. Matter
mm-hmm.
of fact, I've got the Whitaker Chambers book on my bookshelf, and I've got a book on FDR, but I'm not sure if that's the same one that you're talking about. And I'm thinking that maybe that was by Doris Kearns Goodwin. Am I right
no.
or wrong? No,
it was by a female author, but I would remember the name if I heard it. But his chief of staff was practically a Soviet agent. If he wasn't specifically a Russian spy, he was somebody who was, you know, a direct sympathizer with the communist way. And don't forget also, Hitler made Time magazine's Man of the Year, the cover, 2 years. Okay?
Yep.
For 2 years. Okay,
absolutely.
So we're not exactly we don't exactly have a history of picking the right people, you know, to be our foreign role model.
Well, Joe, we're down to our last 3 minutes, so I got to.
Okay.
I want to thank you for calling in and giving us a hand with the show, and hopefully, Cool Mike will be able to come back again. I saw a message from him a while back that they filed the. Oh, again, my brain is going through some major farts here. An appeal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's in court today on that appeal on his court case. I also see that Cal put in that Sonny's trial has been sent over to the Crown Court. That Sonny is with the EDL, the English Defense League, and he's been going through trials and tribulations trying to fight for his rights in London. So our prayers go out with Sonny. I think she wrote in there April 4th will be his new trial date. So I want to welcome everyone and thank you for joining us. Our show next week on Tuesday, I should be having someone from the Liberty Institute. If not, I have a couple other people that are looking to come on the show. And next Friday, we'll come back again with State Senator Lee Bright, who's running against Lindsey Graham. And right now, he's leading the field against the Graham. So if everything goes right, come June 10th, Lee Bright may end up going into the final round and become our next senator from the great state of South Carolina. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and just join us again on Tuesday, same bat time, same bat station, and we'll have some fun again and say good night and God bless you all.
Have a good weekend, man.
You too.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American.